ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, we're in chapter 14, the three modes of material nature, and this afternoon, text number 15. The text is on the board behind me. The Sanskrit Devanagari script has been rendered into the Roman alphabet, so even if you can't read Devanagari, it's up here, so we can all chant this. Text, they're mantras, they're purifying to chant. So we do it responsively. I'll say each word, you can say it after me, and then we'll do each line responsibly. Then we'll study the translation and Prabhupada's purport. So, after me. Rajasi Pralayam Gatva Karma Sangishu Jayate Tha Pralinas Tamasi Murtha Yonishu Jayate Rajasi Pralayam Gatva Karma Sangishu Jayate Tata Pralinas Tamasi Buddha Yonishu Jayate Rajasi Pralayam Gatva Karma Sangishu Jayate Tata Pralinas Tamasi Buddha Yonishu Jayate Rajasi Pralayam Gatva Karma Sangishu Jayate Tata Pralinas Tamasi Mudhajyonishu Jayate
Rajasi Pralayam Gatva Karma Sangishu Jayate Tata Pralinas Tamasi Mudayonishu Jayate
Rajasi Pralayam Gatva
Rajasi Pralayam Gatva
Karma Sangishu Jayate
Karma Sangishu Jayate
Tatha Pralinas Tamasi
Tatha Pralinas Tamasi
Mudayonishu Jayate
Mudayonishu Jayate
Rajasi Pralayam Gatva
Rajasi Pralayam Gatva
Karma Sangishu Jayate
Karma Sangishu Jayate
Pralinas Tamasi
Pralinas Tamasi
Mudayonishu Jayate
Mudayonishu Jayate
Rajasi Pralayam Gatva
Rajasi Pralayam Gatva
Karma Sangishu Jayate
Karma Sangishu Jayate
Tattva Pralina Samasi
Tattva Pralina Samasi
Mudya Yonishu Jayate
Mudya Yonishu Jayate Rajasi Pralayam Gatva
Karma
Sangishu Jayate
Tatha
Pralinas Tamasi
Buddha
Karma Sandhi Shudhayate.
Tatha
Pradinam
Samasi.
Buddha Yoni Shudhayate.
Rajasi.
Rajasi.
In passion.
In passion.
Pralayam.
Pralayam.
Dissolution.
Dissolution.
Gatva.
Gatva.
Attaining.
Attaining.
Karma Sangishu.
Karma Sangishu.
And the association of those engaged in fruitive activities.
In association of those engaged in fruitive activities.
Jayate.
Jayate.
Takes birth.
Takes birth.
Tata.
Tata.
Similarly.
Similarly.
Pralinaha.
Pralinaha.
Being dissolved.
Being dissolved.
Tamasi.
Tamasi.
In ignorance.
In ignorance.
Muda.
Muda.
Yonishu.
Yonishu.
In animal species.
In animal species.
Jayate.
Jayate.
Takes birth.
Takes birth.
Translation. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities, and when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Some people have the impression that when the soul reaches the platform of human life, it never goes down again. This is incorrect. According to this verse, if one develops in the mode of ignorance, after his death, he is degraded to an animal form of life. From there, one has to again elevate himself by an evolutionary process to come again to the human form of life. Therefore, those who are actually serious about human life should take to the mode of goodness and, in good association, transcend the modes and become situated in Krishna consciousness. This is the aim of human life. Otherwise, there's no guarantee that the human being will again attain to the human status. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namaste Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Sunyavari Paschacha Desatarane Omangyanam Timurandasya Garanjana Shalakaya Saksunun Viritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Trubhyas Chakri Pasindabhya Pachapatitanam Bhavanidhyo Vaishnavidhyo Namaha Namaha. So here, Krishna is has been describing various aspects of the three modes of material nature, how people are situated in the various modes. Previously, he's described, go back to text 11, the manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. As Prabhupada says, that in the mode of goodness one can see things in the right position, one can hear things in the right position, one can taste things in the right position, one becomes cleansed inside and out. In every gate there's development of the symptoms of happiness. And that is the position of goodness. Then the next verse says, when there's an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. Prabhupada has this description of the mode of passion. When people hear this description of the mode of goodness, at least in my experience, they're kind of a little puzzled what they're talking about. But when they hear the description of the mode of passion, they know very well. Because our whole society is pretty much, our standard is the mode of passion. So here it is. Here's Prabhupada expands upon this a little bit. One in the mode of passion is never satisfied with the position he has already acquired, right? He hankers to increase his position, always moving up in the corporate ladder, always increasing your income, your compensation package, as they like to call it now, and so on. If he wants to construct a residential house, he tries his best to have a palatial house. That's true. They keep getting bigger and bigger. It's very typical now, I hear, in Los Angeles and places like that. People buy a house and immediately they tear it down. The whole house is teared down so they can build a bigger one. And the houses are called, oh, that's a tear down. Right? He tries to do his best to have a palatial house as if he would be able to reside in that house eternally. And he develops a great hankering for sense gratification. There's no end to sense gratification. Because no one says, okay, I'm satisfied, I'll stop now. They always require more. Huh? He always wants to remain in his family and to his house and to continue in the process of sense gratification. There's no cessation of this. Huh? Then the next verse, when there's an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifest. So these are the characteristics. When there is no illumination, knowledge is absent. One in the mode of ignorance does not work by a regulative principle. He wants to act whimsically for no purpose. Even though he has the capacity to work, he makes no endeavor. This is called illusion. Although consciousness is going on, life is inactive. These are the symptoms of one in the mode of ignorance. That we've also seen. The mode of ignorance. Not steady in any endeavor. Not really capable of... The mode of passion, the person wants something, works for it. The mode of ignorance, one doesn't even care. So there's laziness and procrastination and on again, off again, as far as activity goes. Depression, moroseness, nihilism, intoxication. These are all the development of the mode of ignorance. So we can see these types of people. As Prabhupada succinctly puts it about these three types of people, one is happy, one is active, and one is helpless. Happy, active, and helpless. These are I remember one time I stepped outside. I was at our temple in Boston. It's on Commonwealth Avenue. And I stepped outside. It was about 6:30 in the morning. The sun had just come up. And Commonwealth Avenue has, in the middle of the avenue, there's a park between the two lanes. Pretty wide park with a walkway and grass and benches and stuff along Commonwealth Avenue. And I stepped outside of our temple. I was chanting japa, and I saw in front of me, I saw in the median park, there was a devotee from the temple who was already out there just sort of chanting his japa. And just next to him was a guy a businessman. At 6 o'clock in the morning, had very expensive running shoes on, very expensive short pants on, very Walkman, you know, and he was running, getting his exercise. And then there was a bench, and on the bench was a person, a street person, intoxicated guy, very dirty, had obviously been all night there. And I saw it, just these three people, I thought, there it is, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Happy, active, and helpless, you know. Just like a snapshot arranged by Krishna, a little allegory. So we've had this characteristic of people, what the symptoms are, how they act. And now, what happens at the time of death? When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains the pure higher planets of the great sages. One goes upwards. The heavenly planets, or here the planets of the great sages mean beyond them, like Satyaloka, Tapaloka. So a person who's in the material mode of goodness, when he leaves this planet, he doesn't take birth again on earth, but goes up to the heavenly planets. And stays there. These planets, they're called amalam. They're pure. It's pure, and there where people can again make further spiritual progress. You associate with great sages. Well, the way the Vedic describes these destinations, these lokas, one can go to the Svarga. Now, Svarga is for actually people who are in the mode of passion, but they are going to enjoy the fruits of their work. In other words, if one wants to enjoy the fruits of the work and to enjoy life, you can go about it two ways. You can go about it by following the injunctions of Scripture very carefully. And if you make money, you're also sure to give much money in charity. You worship God or the gods, and so on. So you're regulated, and you may be engaged in sense gratification, fruitive activities, but you do so under the guidance of the scriptural regulations. So if you do this, you will go to these higher planets, which are Svargaloka of Indra, and where the standard of sense gratification is very high. The Vedas describe these places, this Svarga, there you stay there for a long time. But while you are on earth, you have amassed your punya, good karma. You've gotten good karma. And that's like putting money in the bank. Good karmic money in the bank. But then when you go to Svarga, you start to spend it. You use it up. And when it's all gone, you come back down. So it's the place you go, you return. You go up, and then you come back down again. Again, you come to this place, which is called Marchaloka. Then there's even higher than that are the planets where the sages dwell, called Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka, and Satyaloka. There people are not enjoying, but they're engaged in austerities and penances. So you may actually make further spiritual advancement, but also because you're in the material world, again, you can come back down again. There's no guarantee that you'll stay up there or that you'll continue to advance. Anyway, that's dying in the material mode of goodness. Krishna has said already in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 8th chapter, he says that in this world, all of these places, all the planets, are places of misery because birth and death are taking place. There's always, even in heaven, there's trouble in paradise. Indra and the heavenly planets, the demons are always trying to take over. It's just like we see, the example is given in the Bhagavatam of kings. In those days, the kings enjoyed a very opulent lifestyle. They had many palaces, lots of queens and concubines, everything was nice. You thought, well, they're really enjoying, but actually they're always afraid of other kings and have to engage in warfare and stuff like that. So even though they're on such an opulent level, still there's anxiety. As then it says, when one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. So basically, on this planet, the human beings, long-term goal-directed activity, thinking of some better future. So that's there. Then when one dies in the mode of ignorance, the animals. Animals as a whole are in the mode of ignorance. So the first thing Prabhupada wants to point out is that you can go back down again from the human platform. He mentions there some people have the impression that once you arrive at the human form of life, you don't go back down again. I think the theosophists teach like this. But here, at least on the authority of the Bhagavad Gita, says no, that's not true. If one becomes situated in the mode of ignorance, then one goes back down to the animals. And this is because people come to the human form of life. The animals don't create any karma. There's no more rules for the animals. There's no right and wrong. They just do their thing. A soul who's in an animal body, gradually there's a system of going up pretty much the evolutionary scale, what's known now as the evolutionary scale, of the phylogenetic hierarchy, until finally you come to the human form of life. Now at that point you can go back down again. One has become a human, but we live no better than the animals, with no sense of higher purpose, no sense of regulation. Then again you become an animal. And people actually want that sometimes. They think animals have the best possible life. They envy them. I've seen people say like that, you know.
They don't have to work.
I remember looking at the family dog. What a life. It lays around, doesn't have to work, everything is got. The dogs in America, you know, they live very well. Not like in India. Not so attractive, but of course, and now in India also the dogs are moving up the scale. they're becoming elevated. There was a book out one time that was a little terrifying from a devotee point of view. One of these big coffee table books, and on the left hand side showed the dog face, and the right hand side dog's owner's face, and the striking thing was the extreme similarity in the features. There was a bulldog with big jowls and slobbery things, and the owner sure enough had the wattles hanging down and so on. That there was sometimes a very startling resemblance between the dog and the dog owner. From a devotee point of view, this is a little frightening, because that person, the dog owner, and maybe that's the destination. Because if you live like a dog, that's what you become. So this is a fact. Unfortunately, the mode of ignorance is much in the increase. In other words, people now, what are the basic things that an animal does? There are four things that are listed. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And beyond that, there's no purpose. That's just basically all the time is spent in doing those things. And those are the animal functions. Now, we're human beings, and we also have to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. But for us, there's something more. we have a kind of consciousness that's not evident among the animals. We have a sense of right or wrong. We wonder, who am I? Where have I come from? How am I here? What am I doing here? Does my life have a purpose? Does my life have a meaning? Where does the world come from? How did it start? These are the kind of questions that occur to human beings. These questions are there because our consciousness is more fully manifest. When motive ignorance is there, the consciousness becomes constricted. But with our human consciousness, we ask these questions. You can be a person who asks these questions and wonders about these things. And maybe you really try to find things out. Maybe when you're young, you really want to know the answer to these questions. But then nobody seems to know the answers. Everyone seems to be confused. You want to have some purpose to your life, but you can't find out because everybody around you, what's the purpose? Well, you know, let's go out on the weekend, let's get drunk, let's have some sex, we have to get a job, I get a job, I have to work 30 years, they give me a gold watch, then what? Now you die. I have this expectation, there's something important I'm supposed to be doing here with my life, something significant, something bigger than me, something worthwhile. What is it? I don't know, nobody can even tell me. This is the experience, I feel frustrated. Even if everything goes okay, you know, I don't lose my job, I don't suffer from any horrible disease, then you have to work hard, you have to strive. What do I have to show for it? When it's all over? Nothing. And that's very discouraging. I had these expectations when I was young, and now all those, nothing is there. I have this higher consciousness, and nobody can tell me what to do with it. And so then out of disappointment and frustration, what do I do? Well, I do things that restrict my consciousness and narrow it down. I stop thinking about those things. I don't want to think about those things. People around me die, and I don't understand why this is happening. Why do I have to die? I don't know. There's no answer. But I'm now worried about these things. Let me just forget about it. I take the alcohol or some other drugs. I spend my time just sitting in front of a television set, just so I don't have to think about what my life is about. I get on the bus and go to Atlantic City and have some kind of excitement that allows me to forget these things. And it turns out that all I've done is eat, sleep, mate, and defend. And nothing to show for it. I've been an animal. I've become an animal. And a lot of times I act like an animal. Well, what happens to me? I go back down. This is a great tragedy. When Krishna this is the loss of the human form of life. And once we go back down again, you don't know when you're going to pop up. How long it will take before again you attain a human form of life. I mean, it looks to us like there's a lot of humans on this planet, but if you count the other species of life, all the insects and cockroaches, I mean, the rat population in Philadelphia is a whole lot longer, bigger than the human population. Just the rat population. You don't even see these animals, but they're there. Or they say for every one you see, there's 100 you don't, you know. So there's a big, human beings are actually pretty scarce. So you don't know when you'll come back up again. So one should avoid this degradation. That's why when Krishna begins to talk, and just in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when he begins to talk to Arjuna about the practice of devotional service, he says, well, here it is. He says, in this endeavor, there's no loss or diminution. And he says, even a little advancement on this path can protect you from the mahata bhaya, the greatest fear. And that refers to the fear of losing the human form of life. Because the human form of life is really meant for spiritual advancement. That's what it's for. As Srila Prabhupada always said, human life is meant for self-realization. So we have that capacity. And everybody knows if you have some capacity, some ability or some talent, you don't use it, you lose it. It will go away. If you learn a language and then you never use it, it disappears. It's taken away. If I take my arm and just hold it out and don't use my arm, it will atrophy. That's just sort of the law of nature. What you don't use, you lose. And if you have some capacity and you use it, it will develop and grow and get greater and greater and improve and so on. So we have this capacity. Our higher consciousness is this capacity actually for self-realization, for spiritual advancement. And so, if we use that, Krishna says, he says, there's no loss. That is to say, at the time of death, I have not made that much advancement. But I've done something, I've tried, I've made 2% advancement. Then at least I will take my next birth as a human being. And I will start off at 2%. That's what he said, there's no loss. Everything else, all the money or whatever else we may have gained, that's gone. But whatever spiritual advancement we make, that stays with us. So there's no loss, and one will at least avoid this danger of falling down into the animal species of life. That's the recommendation. So, because you say, well, you know, what if I spend time in spiritual life? I don't get very far. I could have spent that time making money or collecting CDs or something. Now I have nothing to show for it. No, you do have something to show for it. One is protected. So we should remember that. This is our business as human beings. Why is that capacity for spiritual advancement there? And why, if we do not if we do not engage ourselves in it, we always will feel that we are disappointed. We'll always feel that unfulfilled. Because what we actually want is eternity. We want eternal life. We want happiness or satisfaction that is beyond the reach of time. That's why if I have some achievement in this material world, yet it gets wiped out in the course of time, I still feel disappointed. And everything that I achieve is destroyed at the time of death. Or even if I want fame or something that lasts beyond death, okay, people remember me for another 20 years and then it's all over. People want to become famous and get their names in the history book. So your name goes in the history book. And then, you know, for 200 years, school teachers, school children are tortured by having to remember your name and then forget it. It's not really. And there's, you know, there's some street named after you, and somebody said, who was that guy? I don't know. It's not worth it. All you did to become famous. And then, of course, after 1,000 years, who remembers it? 2,000 years. It's not there. So because actually we want something that's really eternal. That's built in. Our disappointment with the temporary nature of things in this material world is just evidence of our eternal nature. This is what we're really for. Unfortunately now, we don't know what to do with it. Because our civilization is now degrading. It used to be that human civilization was more attuned to the mode of goodness and understood progress in terms of the mode of goodness. But now our standard of progress is that of the mode of passion. And as we go down from goodness to passion, also the mode of ignorance automatically increases. And because of the mode of ignorance is there now, we don't know what to do with our human capacity anymore. The human desire for transcendental knowledge seems to be some superfluous thing. Nobody can tell us what to do with it. We do not get proper instruction in spiritual science. And most people now, it's just all hocus pocus, and it's not understood anymore. That's very unfortunate. And that just increases people's disappointment. And therefore the mode of ignorance increases because they become nihilistic. They become depressed, chronically depressed. Take more and more to drugs and so on. And the mode of ignorance increases, and people go down further and further into animal life. Prabhupada goes on to say, those who are actually serious about the human form of life to take to the mode of goodness. First of all, something can be done about it. We ourselves are born into a certain body, and when we're born, we have a tendency toward either goodness, passion, or ignorance, or some mixture of them. That's built into us, and then by association of culture that can be reinforced. Some people, and that goodness, passion, or ignorance, we've inherited, that's our karma from previous lives. But it's not that we cannot do anything about it. Because Prabhupada said people should take to the mode of goodness. What if I'm a really passionate person? How do I take to the mode of goodness? Well, first of all, I have to make a decision. That's what I want to do. And I should understand the three modes of material nature. That's the first thing one needs, is a kind of analytical study. I should understand the defects of the mode of passion. As we will find in the next verse, the mode of passion results in misery. That's the result. Mode of goodness results in knowledge. One becomes happy and satisfied. Mode of passion results in misery. And the mode of ignorance, one simply becomes foolish and insane. These are how we end up. And once Krishna has pointed this out, if you can start to become a diagnostician of the modes of nature, you go around and you look, you'll see this is true. You understand the faults of the modes of passion and mode of ignorance, and determined I'm going to do something about it, then you can actually change. One can elevate oneself. We are principally in the mode of passion. You can either let that be degraded into the mode of ignorance, or you can elevate to goodness.
and the instructions are there. Certainly, as the description is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that by engaging in the processes of Krishna consciousness, the effect of the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance decrease. They go down. And this can be detected clinically. One devotee has actually wrote his doctoral dissertation on this matter in psychology. He got a bunch of, did the kind of experiments, got a bunch of people, and it was a controlled thing. They were not devotees, just people selected from, I don't know how he did it, but you know how you do random sample selection. One group, they chanted the Hare Krishna mantra, and the other group, they chanted something else, Coca-Cola, 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 or something like that, you know, Merry Krishna, I don't know. Some other thing. And you can give people without describing to them different qualities, mental qualities of modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, and rate people, rate themselves, and you rate them. And it showed that by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, modes of passion, modes of ignorance decreased. These are people who didn't have any faith in it. And there was a control group chanting something else, so that, anyway, for those people that like that kind of thing, there's that sort of evidence is there, and we have plenty of anecdotal evidence. When I first came into contact with the Krishna consciousness movement, I started chanting Hare Krishna mantra and japa as an experiment, just to see what would happen. Now, I understood from religious studies that everybody teaches that the cause of suffering are our desires, our cravings. The Lord Buddha says this very clearly, but everywhere in the higher levels of spiritual life, everyone teaches this. Jesus teaches it, Lao Tzu teaches it, Confucius teaches it. Everywhere, you that our attachments and our desires are the cause of our suffering, and one should become free from those things. But I found it very difficult to do. But when I began to chant the Hare Krishna mantra, I noticed these desires and cravings for material enjoyment, addictions, they began to go away. I only had enough faith in the chanting to just try it and see what would happen. So we have plenty of evidence like that. The potency is there. So one can actually elevate oneself to goodness. If the desire is there, one can take to spiritual practice, and then we have to change our association. If you want to stop, for example, drinking alcohol, one thing you have to do is to stop hanging out with other people who do that. If you want to have some spiritual practices, you should change your association to spiritual people. If you want to elevate to the mode of goodness, find those people in the mode of goodness and associate with them. Avoid the association of people in the modes of passion and ignorance. And this way, we have some freedom. We can use that freedom. We do not have to be totally the puppets of the modes of material nature. But we should understand that we very much, because we're social animals, we become like those people we associate with. So we need the association of saintly people. Come to the mode of goodness, and then from the material mode of goodness, then we are in a position to go even further and to transcend the modes of nature entirely, and therefore put an end to the whole process of repeated birth and death in the material world. Then, free from all danger. Right? Free from all danger. And that is the aim of human life. We should take this seriously. Anyway, we have a very nice analytical study in this chapter. Just explain what does it mean to be liberated? What does it mean to transcend? When we say transcend, go beyond, what are we going beyond? These modes of material nature to the transcendent state. And we get an idea of what that's like. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any question? Anybody have? Yeah.
The sadhusa is very important to be very good, successful devotees.
I'm sorry?
Is a sadhusa, like some devotees say, trip sadhusa, you will never be married or...
Oh, sannyasi.
Sannyasi.
Well, people in the mode of goodness, people have to be self-controlled. Even in marriage, there are rules and regulations. But it helps. Sannyas, brahmachari, those who are very detached from the material world, that's okay. But in our Krishna conscious line, we've had great devotees. Some are sannyasis. Some are householders. We have Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for example. Other people are householders. So, it actually depends. In any case, one has to be free from material attachment. Whether one is in whatever ashram as one is situated. You may perform the duties of your ashram, but those duties have to be performed without attachment. Arjuna is never advised by Krishna to take sannyas. Arjuna's first thing, that's what I should do. I should get out of this battlefield and I should take sannyas. He said, no. You should perform your duty. In this case, he's a politician, and a warrior, and a householder. But you should... Sannyas means you do your duty, but without attachment to the results. That is really what sannyas is. So we understand really what sannyas is. In that sense, yes, all of us should take sannyas. We should become free from attachment to the results of our actions. Perform our actions solely for the satisfaction of Krishna. That's real sannyas. Okay. I think, we've run out of time. So now you have some announcement. I want to say one other thing. This morning, or I guess it was yesterday morning in Mayapur, my godbrother, His Holiness Sridhar Swami, left his body. He's a senior Prabhupada disciple, a member of the GBC, sannyasi, and also disciples. And he's ill for a long time, and he was in Vancouver. He had cancer of the liver, and the doctors said he had a matter of a week or so to live. And so in the middle of March, he flew to Mayapur, and praying only that he could live long enough to participate in the installation of our Panchatattva deities. So he was in quite good spirits, actually. He was in Mayapur, and he had a great reception when he came. Krishna granted his prayers. He participated in the installation. I posted on the bulletin board a picture I took. He's bathing Lord Nityananda. You can see the picture there. So he was quite happy. And because of his condition, he was swollen up. He was filling with fluids, and his stomach was very big. I was in his room, and he was lying down. Devotees were chanting and everything. We didn't know when he was going to leave his body. It could be any time. There was a doctor there who was examining him with his large belly. Srinivas Maharaj looked at the doctor, and he said, "It's a boy." So in spite of the gravity of the situation, he was quite lighthearted and humorous. He was like that. So finally, he did leave his body. I mean, he had no liver functions left. And so it's amazing Krishna let him stay for that long. I understood that just on Saturday in Mayapur, he was actually able to go and bathe in the Ganga, and then the next day he left his body. So his picture's up there, and we all pray for him, and think he's gone to Krishna Loka, or at least whatever, he's being our Krishna consciousness moving servant Srila Prabhupada somewhere. And there's a description of his passing and the service, and he was put to rest in Samadhi next to Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi. Srila Sridhar Maharaj Ki.
Thank you very much, Sir Prabhu, for the wonderful class. One more time. For Sunday feast, we have two sponsors today. First one is Raj Rao, Varun family. They are sponsoring in the memory of their mother-in-law, Satyavati Varun. I would like to ask Raj Rao, Prabhu, to come and accept the prasad.
Thank you very much.
What? Yeah. Again. Please give me one more. The other family is Raj Pathak and family. They are sponsoring birthday of Silvi and Varun. Are they here, Silvi and Varun? Silvi and Varun. Come on over.
Birthday.
No?
Oh?
Yes, Silvi is not coming. Ekadasi is the day we fast from grains and beans. So please fast on March 16th, you say. The name of the Ekadasi is Papamochini Ekadasi. So this is a wonderful Ekadasi and we should fast on that day. We're looking for a sponsor for Ramnavami Deity outfit. Let me tell you a little bit about the how the sponsoring works, because some of you may not be aware of it. The deity outfits are made in Vrindavan. We need a lead time of about 5 to 6 months. Okay? There are a handful of devotees who prepare this outfit in Vrindavan. So we need to know in advance. Sometimes when we don't have a sponsor, we in the sense that Subhadra Devi Dasi, who is the head pujari here, and the devotees, they decide on colors and how the outfit will look like. Yeah. Depending on what different colors they have, so they have different multiple colors and so on and so forth. So sometimes you don't have a choice when you are ready to sponsor that, you know, I want this color. You have to do that by 5 or 6 months in advance in order for us to accommodate your requests. We have Ram Navami coming up, and we're going to have a new outfit which is already selected, and they are working on that one. But we need sponsor, and the sponsorship is $1,500. And that will be the, cover the expenses for the outfit for all the deities we have on also. If you would like to sponsor, please see me or see Dasarath Prabhu in the office. If you like to sponsor any other festivities that when we have coming up, we already